Welcome to Nurse Educator Podcast. I'm Marilyn Orman, Editor-in-Chief of Nurse Educator. With me today are Dr. Elizabeth Riley and Dr. Furman Renteria, and I'm so pleased that they're able to join us today. They're both from the University of Arkansas Medical Sciences College of Nursing, and that's in Little Rock, Arkansas. But they have done an excellent study and are experts in doing two-stage collaborative testing. And they're willing to do this podcast today to explain how to do it in a course if you are interested in using some collaborative testing, and then to also share some of their best practices and their results. Elizabeth, could we start with you today? Tell us first a little bit what collaborative testing is and some ways to use it with pre-licensure nursing students.
Yes. So first off, thank you so much, Dr. Orman, for having us today. So collaborative testing is really one of those active learning modalities that we can use with nursing students. And really what you do with that is you have the students come together in groups of two students or more in each group, and they actually take a test together. And it can help promote some of that active learning that we're looking for a lot of times, especially with pre-licensure nursing students. And then to take that a step further with the two-stage collaborative testing, generally what we do there is we have the student come in and take a test on their own, and then they come back later in the same day if it's possible. So usually we do the test on their own in the morning, and then have them come back that afternoon and take a same or similar exam in groups together. And this can be helpful with building some of those active learning activities. They learn from each other. And generally, we save these experiences for that content that they struggle with more so than other content. So for our specific program in Foundations 1 and 2, the content that we see the students struggling with the most is that content that covers acid-base balance, blood gases, trying to really dig deep into figuring out how to read blood gases, what the interventions are for the different types of abnormal blood gases, and also endocrine, so diabetes care, how to assess for diabetes, and endocrine in general, so the different issues with hypo and hyperthyroidism and things like that. So that's the content that we used the collaborative two-stage collaborative testing for. And what I would recommend for other programs is to just look and see what content you feel like your students are struggling with the most and save those experiences for that, because that's where it's the most beneficial.
And I think that's a good best practice for faculty to think about. I'm also wondering, with this two-stage collaborative testing, it seems like it would build a lot of collaboration between students or in a small group. I know in your article you talked about social interdependence theory. Can you share how that theory helped you develop this collaborative testing model?
Yes, absolutely. So that was definitely a theory that we considered and used while we were planning and implementing our two-stage collaborative test. So the social interdependence theory is a theory that basically asserts that when students learn together and they have kind of a semi-high stakes or even high stakes learning that they must do together. So for instance, with our two-stage collaborative testing, they got points for the test that they took as a group. So everybody in the group has a shared interest and a shared knowledge that however the group does is going to affect how each of them do because of the points that they get distributed for taking the second part of the two-stage collaborative testing. So it really motivates them to really sit and discuss the questions that are on the collaborative test in an effort to try to, you know, get the most answers right possible as a group, because they're all having that shared experience of trying to do well on the test and ultimately, you know, be successful in the course.
I'm curious how the use of collaborative testing and actually the study that you completed fit in with the evaluation and assessment of learning within your program.
Thank you, Dr. Orman. I will take this question, and I also want to extend my thanks for being here today. Really, the way that collaborative testing in this research study fit in with our evaluation and assessment of learning within the program is kind of twofold. Number one, obviously for formative and summative assessments of the learners during the classes so that we can use those assessments to refine our teaching, evaluate student learning, those sorts of things within the course, just for improvement in the course in general and improvement of our curriculum in general. But also our institution is CCNE accredited, and this process actually really feeds into a couple of those accreditation standards, specifically standard 3I, which talks about individual student performance being evaluated by the faculty and reflecting achievement of expected student outcomes. And evaluation policies and procedures for the individual student performance are are defined and consistently applied. And so we can use the testing, the data analysis, the item analysis from these exams, exam scores and things, obviously, to speak to those accreditation standards. And then one of the other standards, standard 3J, which talks about curriculum and teaching learning practices being evaluated regularly, and then evaluation data are used to foster ongoing improvement. And as a part of our curriculum committee review process, those courses are looked at regularly. And things that are used for that, one of the pieces of data that is used for that are the course evaluations that are completed by the students. And so obviously these sorts of activities will feed into those student evaluations of the course. And then also other data that's looked at are grades for the course, so overall grades, number of A's, number of B's, number of C's. So those really, I think, are the two major ways that the collaborative testing and this research study in particular kind of fed into our evaluation and assessment of learning within the program.
You mentioned item analysis. Could you discuss a little bit more of the use of item analysis for your study and why that was important? And I guess also follow up, if you do collaborative testing in a course, for example, should we all be doing item analysis?
Yes, ma'am. Objective multiple choice exams, as we all know, are a common thing in academia in general and nursing specifically. But one of the challenges for nurse educators is developing tests that do two things. They evaluate learning and they prepare students for the NCLEX. And item analysis is a way to objectively look at multiple choice exams and is used for all exams in our nursing program. So not we didn't do item analysis just for this particular study and on this collaborative testing format. We do that with all of our exams for each of the courses. Some of the, and as a part of the regular courses, the things that we look at real closely are the KR20 for the exam, the item difficulty values, and the point by serial. Now for our research study, pretty specifically, we looked at the KR20 and the item difficulty. Now the KR20 of an exam is a measure of reliability for the examination. And it has a score ranging from 0 to 1. The closer the score is to 1, that indicates a higher reliability for the exam. Now, there are several factors that can lead to lower reliability of an exam, and those include that the test questions really are kind of unrelated to each other. The scores reflect peculiarities really more with the exam questions themselves rather than with student knowledge of the content. So not real well-written test questions, that sort of thing. And then test questions that are too easy, because it's really hard to get a good reliability of an exam if there are a lot of very easy questions on the exam. Now for nursing exams, pretty typically a KR20 of 0.5 or higher is considered to be good. And really that's just because nursing exams typically cover a fairly wide range of topics. You don't have just a cardiovascular exam or just a respiratory exam regularly. And the item difficulty It's really just a simple percentage of students who answered the question correctly. And it may be presented either as a percentage form, so you may see it written as 70%, or it may be presented in more of a decimal point format, 0.7. Difficulty values that are closer to 100 or to 1, depending on the format, indicate an easier test item. And then, as I said, for this research study, we looked really at the KR20 and the item difficulty values. And the reason that we did that was to evaluate retention of material, because it was a repeated test. And so we wanted to look at the difficulty. You would expect that the difficulty would be a little lower, so a higher number with that repeated item on the test that, again, reflects retention of the knowledge. And then to the question about should we all be doing item analysis, I really truly believe that item analysis really is an integral part of all testing in nursing programs, because again, it gives you that objective evaluation of learning on the part of the students. And so you really want to ensure that you've got very reliable exams that are doing a good job of preparing students. And so that doesn't mean they're always easy exams. You want to have exams that challenge learners, because that's going to be the thing that prepares them for NCLEX.
I hope that Dr. Riley answers the question, did students learn from this? And was there an alignment between your test score results and student satisfaction?
Yes, absolutely. We were very excited when we did our paired samples t-test to compare how the students did on the test they took by themselves in the morning compared to the test they took collaboratively in the afternoon, that there was actually a statistically significant increase in their individual examination scores. So we were very excited about that. We also had a retrospective group from a previous year that we did not implement collaborative testing with, just because we had not talked about that as a group yet, or really come up with that idea yet. And so we looked at their test scores and on their unit exam and then their final exam, which had some of the similar questions. And there was not a statistically significant increase in those scores. So we do feel like that collaborative testing is very helpful for that more difficult type content where the students need additional reinforcement to really help them learn that particular content. And then as far as student reported satisfaction, we found that 93.4% of our students agreed that they felt that two-stage collaborative testing was beneficial to their collaboration skills, which was very important and really tied right back into that social interdependence theory of, increasing their ability to collaborate. And also, we didn't necessarily plan for this, but, in thinking about what you do in the role as a nurse, being able to collaborate with your peers is going to be absolutely, critical. So we felt like we were also able to help them with collaboration in general as well.
And I think that collaboration outcome was important. And I agree with you. I'm also thinking you could use this model in master's and DMP and PhD education too. I think a nice way to summarize all of the important concepts you talked about is, could you just share some best practices for our listeners who want to do two-stage collaborative testing?
Yes. So several things are really considered best practice. One of those things is kind of what Dr. Renteria talked about earlier. Really, the exams should be analyzed per item, and the KR20 should also be looked at just to make sure that your test is reliable that you're going to be using, especially if you're going to do a research study on it, because you need to make sure that you're measuring what you say you're measuring. Another important thing that we found is that it's really important the way that you group the students when you group them up for the second part of the two-stage collaborative test. So the way that we did it was we looked at student prior student performance on previous exams, and we made sure that we put higher performing students with lower performing students in each of the groups. So that way there was kind of an even distribution of student performance within each group. And we found that that's really important to do, just because it's really not fair to put all the, you know, quote unquote A students with, you know, each other, and then put all the C students with each other. You really need that mixed performance between all of the students. Another thing that's also important to consider, kind of what I talked about earlier, is just making sure that you're using this with that more difficult content that you feel like students may be struggling with. And then also, this does not take the place of final exams or even unit exams necessarily. So we're not saying, you know, implement every single test that you do, implement a two-stage collaborative testing with it. That's generally, you don't want to do this with every single test. You really want to save it for that content that's a little bit more difficult, just because if you did this with every single exam, you might risk a little bit of grade inflation over time. And we all know that that's already something that which, you know, don't want to do in nursing school for nursing students anyways. And so we definitely suggest that anybody that wants to use this, you know, take those best practices. You can look at our article if you want a little bit more information, more detail about it. But this is definitely something that can be implemented within pretty much any nursing program and can be evaluated.
Thank you so much for sharing those best practices and really for making this podcast one that you can grasp as an educator how to get started with this. And I urge our listeners to read the full article. There's more best practices and tips in the article as well. Thank you so much, Elizabeth and Furman, for joining us for this podcast. And this concludes the podcast today.